From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 18th day of August, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel, the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the Speaker of the House says when Congress returns to Washington next month, they'll take up legislation that could allow the CFTC to set trading limits on all ag commodities. And China is expected to put a tariff on urea, that in an attempt to discourage the export of the valuable source of nitrogen. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories later in the half hour, and then I'll tell you how one U of I nutritionist sees hog producers adjusting rations to compensate for the higher cost of feed inputs. Hey, don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company, ADM, resourceful by nature.
Taking a look now at the numbers as they settled in Chicago. On a Monday afternoon, numbers like this in the wheat pit: September contract at $8.59¾, 35½ cents higher. December futures for the soft red at $8.84¾, up 35½. Of the March futures, 35 cents higher at $9.09. September corn futures, $5.5323¼ higher for the day. The December futures up 23¼ as well at $5.72¾. And the March contract in the corn pit finished at $5.91¾ on a Monday afternoon, up 23¼. May futures up 23 cents at $6.03½. September soybean futures, $12.79. The finish for the September this afternoon at 67½ cents higher. November beans at $12.89, up 70. And January futures at $13.06¾ up 70. March contract, $13.22¼, up 69¾. September bean meal futures at $3.49.80, up $17 on the day. September futures in the bean oil at $52.52, up $2.48 for the afternoon. August live cattle futures at $101.92½, 25 cents higher. October futures at $105.95, up 10 cents even. August feeder cattle at $113.65, 25 cents higher. And the lean hogs finished the August at $88.50, up 27½ cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. Ethanol futures for the day at $2.18, up 0.4 cents, up 4¼ cents. And the natural gas at $7.88, up 21¾ cents. The RBOB gasoline trading at $2.82, that's 3¾ cents higher. And the September heating oil at $3.93¼, up 2½ cents. September propane futures at $1.54 are unchanged on the afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Basedifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like on a Monday afternoon. Prepared by our own Ed Kieser, it's really very short. Ed says mostly clear skies across the two-state region tonight. Lows generally between 54 and 60, except warmer in the mid-60s in and near Lake Michigan and Chicago. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, says Ed. Highs will range between 82 and 88. The extended weather forecast looks like this. Dry weather expected across Illinois and Indiana and most of the Midwest through the middle of the week. The forecast becomes a little less clear for later this week and beyond, in large part because of an uncertain track storm for Tropical Storm Fay. Fay, of course, taking a slow and erratic path at this point, as it appears Fay will make landfall along the west coast of Florida as a Category 1 or 2 hurricane during the day tomorrow. However, Faye still could track into the Gulf of Mexico or up the middle of Florida or along the east coast of Florida.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It was an interesting overnight trade session that followed right on through for the day trade and sharply higher in corn, beans, and even wheat today.
Yeah, some strong gains. Number one front and center is probably the weather for, say, for most of the summer, other than being a little cold and wet to start with, is somewhat favorable through the growing season, a lack of really real strong heat. But as we wrap up the growing season, we're just continuing to see the crop behind, but it seems we're running out of some moisture in some areas, and that's put the trade on edge. We've got a good old-fashioned weather market going. The trade's going to be watching the weather maps real close here this week, see how much rain materializes as we go into the weekend. Quarter to 1 inch on 70-80% coverage is great if you get the 1 inch, but those who get the quarter inch are going to be seeing some additional need for moisture as we try to finish off the crop. This afternoon's crop conditions report expected to confirm the crop's still late, and that we'll probably see maybe 1-2% drop out of that good to excellent category, Todd.
Are farmers asking you much about marketing their crop, or are they content to sit back and watch and hope for a bull market?
Right now, they're sort of in a holding pattern. A lot of producers have gone out into the field and have taken some views at it, and they're finding that the tips are shrunk back on the corn, and the beans are still awful short, and the pod counts aren't there, and so they're in a holding pattern here, anxious to see some type of recovery rally here to get some additional sales on. There's going to be a crop out there. You know, how big, we'll debate that clear into next year. But for the most part, ideally, if we can regain a half of what we've lost here, I think producers would be a little bit more aggressive. But they're really interested in the Pro Farmer tour here. They're putting out their first observations. They found the South Dakota corn crop to be in this 118 bushel area on their early observations. Last year they were at 111, and so it's better than last year, but their average is right around that 119 bushels to the acre. Pod count for the few fields they did earlier this morning, they came up with an average of about 817. Last year they found a low over 1,068, and their three-year tour is right around 1,000. So they said those pods aren't quite there, but those plants are still blooming. In Ohio, they came up with 155 bushel corn versus 146 a year ago. The three average is 143. So corn's looking pretty good in Ohio, but once again, how much time they have. On the pod count, they're looking at 1,200. Per sample versus 1,270 last year, and about 1,325 on their three-year average there, Todd.
In the last several weeks, you have been probably as bearish as anybody we've had on the air. Are you still looking for this market to move higher or lower, rather? And do the numbers that you're starting to see come out of this Pro Farmer John Deere Crop Tour across the Midwest supporting that?
I'm going with the technical turn we saw last week. Monday, Tuesday, we had some reversals up. We followed through to the upside on price strength. We have confirmation now that we have some bearish trend divergences intact in here on the momentum indicators, suggesting a sizable retracement rally back to the upside. So I've done a flip 180 here on you.
Okay, that's fine.
It's a fast market. I don't like it, but it says we're going higher.
Okay.
And that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to expect the market to move higher here. And, you know, until the technical indicators turn back the other way, I think you got to look for some higher prices here. You know, fundamentally, you know, things have turned positive here with the last part of last week, being able to visit with more producers across the Midwest, finding the same type of results out in the field. That's it's tightened up the supply-demand balance sheet. Now, the U.S. WASDE report was not wrong here, as their observations indicated on the last report, but that suggested the corn and bean crop had some fairly good potential, but things have changed dramatically since then. So, yes, putting the technicals together, putting the fundamentals together, I believe as a trader, you should be long in the market. As a producer, I think you sort of sit back here and try to stretch this thing higher before making additional cash sales.
Long the market, and are we talking for the long haul again through the time frame, maybe January, March, or is this just a short-term run?
Well, we feel we've recorded some cyclical lows here that project a sideways, a higher trend into Thanksgiving, first part of December. We feel, you know, we're not just going to go straight up between now and then, but we feel that, you know, we can move higher and, you know, have some major corrections, you know, back down to alleviate the overbought status. But we feel the overall major trend has shifted from down to higher into the 1st of December.
Okay, well, thank you for being honest along the road, and sometimes you have to turn around.
Well, this thing's so fast, and, you know, it's hard to change. That's the toughest part, from bullish to bearish, and it does it in a hurry. But probably the biggest gain, the most thing we're excited about, is we feel the cash market probably has quite a bit of potential as we go into 1st of December, as these end users come forward to start to gather some inventory.
We appreciate all of your discussion today, and we'll talk with you in another week.
Very good.
Okay, Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Actually, with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on Monday afternoons here on the Closing Market Report. In 2 minutes, actually in a couple of moments, Dave Dickey will be here with a look at today's agricultural news.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says when Congress returns to Washington in September, they will consider expanded offshore drilling as part of a broad energy policy legislation. Expected to be included in the package will also be safeguards and reduced taxpayer subsidies to oil companies. The package will also include a mandatory release of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and language allowing the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to set trading limits on all agricultural and energy commodities. Fertilizer industry officials are predicting that China will increase its tariff from 135% to 185% on urea in an attempt to discourage export of nitrogen supplies. China's official news service reports a new tariff could be in place as soon as Wednesday. The Midwest Pro Farmer Crop Tour gets underway today. More than 70 volunteers will scout corn and soybean fields across seven states: Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and South Dakota. Final yield estimates are expected on Friday morning. The U.S. says it plans to host a round of high-level trade talks with China next month. The two-day talks are scheduled to begin on September 15th. The agenda for the meeting has yet to be finalized. During their last trade meeting in December, the U.S. and China signed agreements to ensure the safety of imports of food, feed, and drugs into the U.S., and deals were also made covering trade in high-tech goods. A strike at three Potash Corporation mines has entered its second week with no talks on the horizon and threats to further squeeze supply. A spokesperson for the United Steelworkers says the union will encourage workers at other mines owned by Potash to refuse overtime work. Company officials declined to comment on inventory levels at the three mines affected by the strike. and deferred Kansas City hard red winter wheat futures will settle based on spread relationships under new procedures going into effect in September. Settlements for all Kansas City wheat futures, except for the lead contract month, will be based on spread trades reported during the close. If individual spreads trade at multiple prices during the close, the Wheat Pick Committee will use the weighted average of the spread prices in determining the settlement. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you of two things today. First, as always, visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you'll find daily ag programming that you can listen to anytime you'd like. You can sign up for our free weekend newsletter as well. It's over on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe at willag.org. The other thing is that this Thursday morning, starting at 7 a.m., the wagons will head into the research fields here on the South Farms in Urbana-Champaign for Agronomy Day. It's free, your opportunity to meet and talk to the researchers and scientists that have been working for you all year long. I'll be dispatching those wagons, and I hope to see you there. That's this Thursday morning on the South Farms right here in Urbana-Champaign, not too awfully far from the Assembly Hall. Now up next, tomorrow evening, the IPPA, that's the Illinois Pork Producers Association, along with the University of Illinois Swine Specialist, will host a telephone conference to discuss issues related to managing hog production in times of very high feed cost. It starts at 7 p.m. Central, and your questions are welcomed. For complete details, visit the Illinois Pork Producers Association website. That's at ilpork.com. We have a little preview of the program today with a nutritionist from the U of I that says there are three things hog producers can do to improve the economics of feed costs. The U of I, in cooperation with the Illinois Pork Producers Association, has been working hard to help hog farmers around the state and the Midwest work their way through some very tough times. Part of that mission includes a new website with cost-saving tips and lectures. Hans Stein is featured there. You can find it by visiting ilpork.com. He's a University of Illinois nutritionist and says there are three primary considerations to improving feed profitability. They are using alternative feed ingredients, improving feed conversion rates, and not overformulating diets. Stein says producers in the Midwest have long fed corn and soybean meal, but must now consider alternative feed sources.
There are four different types of alternative ingredients. We have intact ingredients, and those would be other crops that are grown in the U.S. Other than corn and soybean meal. We have field peas, we have barley, we have sorghum, we have oats, and we have wheat, and we have other ingredients. All of these ingredients are great for swine and can be used whenever they are available at competitive prices. The second group we have are processed ingredients. And processed ingredients would include distillers dried grains with solubles or DDGS and other co-products from the ethanol industry. It would be wheat middlings, it would be meat and bone meal, poultry meal, molasses, whey, and many other products. The processed ingredients in general are more variable in composition than the intact ingredients, but in particular, the co-products from the ethanol industry are available in great quantities and they are very economical to use.
The other alternative feed types come from local industries. One of them is called rest products. These are things like pet food, cookie dough, and buns, all of which, for one reason or another, did not meet spec requirements. The last group is a related list, but are termed byproducts from other industries. It includes things like old bread from supermarkets and restaurant offal.
Before anyone goes into feeding alternative feed ingredients, there are some key questions that you need to ask yourself. First of all, can you handle one or two or three extra ingredients? And can you handle the ingredients in the form they are delivered? Many producers have only one bin for corn and one bin for soybean meal connected to their grinding operation. And if you want more ingredients, you need to have more bins installed and they need to be hooked up to the grinding and mixing facility. So that's the first thing that you need to find out. Is it economical to invest in new equipment if you have to handle more ingredients?
The second question is whether or not it's possible to handle quality control related to alternative feedstuffs. This might include paying for a nutrient analysis and the expertise to reformulate rations to handle the different nutrient load. Those wanting to learn more from Hans Stein about alternative feed sources, improving feed conversion rates, and not over-formulating diets should visit ilpork.com and look for the link to Managing Pigs in Tough Times web series. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Urbana-Champaign's campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Time to take a look at the agricultural futures, actually cash grain markets. This afternoon, Brian Stark of the Andersons is with us. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Did you read some of those numbers that have been coming in from the Midwest Crop Tour that Chip Flory is leading out on the east side?
Yeah, briefly. We've seen that they've seen a little bit of progress in Ohio and South Dakota. Seemed to be a little bit better than last year in Ohio and South Dakota. But as always, two concepts have come up here recently in the last couple of weeks, one being the dryness that's starting to be exhibited, surprisingly enough, after the wet growing season we've had. It's been dry in August for a lot of areas. Over half the Corn Belt seems to be in need of rain. And also the lateness, that's the biggest question right now, where the USDA's last week's numbers are potential and whether still can have a play in this here in the next few weeks or so.
Chip Flory will join us on Commodity Week this week, but I do want to read something from Pro Farmer and AgWeb's website. AgWeb.com is where you can pick most of this up if you'd like to see it yourself. I know that we heard earlier in the program that there was 155 bushel yield out of Ohio on the average, but here's some interesting facts about that. Based on corn samples taken today in Ohio, an average of the rough yields predicts yields to reach about 155 bushel. They had only taken seven samples at this time. The range of rough yields between 96 and 197 bushels to the acre. Yields averaged 161.9 in the same counties and 162.6 in 2006. That according, of course, to the USDA numbers. So there's a 155 there, but they had a pretty wide and variable range. And it'll be interesting to see how well that holds up across the state of Ohio as they make their way through the rest of that state and then Indiana and Illinois.
Sure. No, I agree. I think the key there is variability. I think anytime you see a wet year like we've had relative to an example in 93, you're going to have highly variable spots across the belt as they survey things. So it's not surprising one bit, I guess, as we go forward. And I think that's going to keep the trade guessing until we actually get in the fields this October.
Do you see the basis levels getting stronger in the month of August as we close this out? And I've only got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think so. I think the bean processors are starting to look at taking downtime, so I think the bean basis could start to fade a little bit for old crop. But corn basis seems to be hand-to-mouth demand, so I think that it could see an uptick here as we go into the end of the month, beginning of September.
And we have just enough time for your bids.
525 cash corn, fall corn's 531, cash soybeans 1294, and fall beans 1227.
Thanks much, Brian.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Monday afternoons.
It's National Ice Cream Pie Day. The Eskimo Pie, America's first chocolate-covered ice cream bar, was invented by Christian Kent Nelson in 1920. The inspiration was a boy making a purchase at Nelson's confectionery store. The boy started to buy an ice cream cone, but then changed his mind and instead purchased a chocolate bar. Nelson asked the boy why he did not buy both. The boy's reply, "I wanted them both, but I only have a nickel." Thus, the inspiration for Nelson's creation of sticking melted chocolate to frozen ice cream. On this day in agricultural history in 1850, Henri de Balzac died, a French author. He would lock himself away during creative bursts, drinking coffee and eating only fruit and eggs. When he finally took a break, he was known to consume huge quantities of food. One report recalls that once he consumed at one sitting 100 oysters, 12 cutlets of salt meadow mutton, a duck with turnips, 2 partridges, and a Normandy sole, not to mention the desserts, fruit, and liquors he finished up with. And in 2004, it was reported that it rained fish at about 2:30 in the afternoon in Shropshire, Western England. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Joining us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago is Josh Darr. Good afternoon to you, Josh.
Hey, Todd. How's it going?
The weather has been beautiful here. A little dry now, but I'll bet we'll continue to see some really nice temps, it seems, for the week. Is that right?
Yeah, we sure will. This is just gorgeous, gorgeous late summer weather here. And, you know, it can still get pretty hot in August. And certainly the warm temperatures are nowhere to be found, really, across the Midwest through most of the week. And temps will be mainly in the 80s across the belt and pretty dry, all things considered, through most of this week.
Is Fay the big thing that's happening across the nation at this time?
Yeah, it's Fay and its precip that's occurred over the winter wheat belt of Kansas into Texas and Oklahoma over the past several days. Those are the two main weather stories here with Fay. Fay right now is a 1,001 millibar system. Looks like it's going to make landfall near Naples, Florida, tomorrow afternoon, and then move up into northern Florida, into the southeastern U.S., and then potentially stall out, which could bring flooding rains to the southeastern U.S. Certainly, that could be an issue for things like peanuts and cotton in the southeastern U.S., but from a positive standpoint, it will help alleviate the long-term drought conditions they've had.
Yeah, on the backside of that system, does it mean that places like Ohio, maybe far eastern Indiana, will catch some showers too?
That's a great question. When Fay moves inland late this week, the steering currents are very weak, and so, you know, we look at tons of different models for hurricanes and where they're going to go. One set of guidance does project a scenario where eastern Indiana and Ohio will see rainfall associated with Fay early next week. We actually don't believe that's going to come to fruition. We think the rain will stay in the southeast and then get shunted out into the Mid-Atlantic later next week. But we predominantly think it's a rather dry forecast next 10 days. Just the far southern and eastern portions of the belt may see some minor rainfall totals, but by and large, it's dry for the next 10 days.
Dry for the next 10 days. Any rainfall after that, can you see, or are we changing from this persistent every few days rainfall, and I guess we have, to something that would be more of a summer-like pattern?
Yeah, the ridge is this ridge of high pressure, which isn't an intense feature from the standpoint of precipitation, but is bringing pretty clear skies. That looks to be well entrenched across the northeastern portions of the U.S. into Canada, and that allows for rather dry conditions across the Midwest for the foreseeable future.
And tell me about the rest of the planet.
Well, I think the one headline here is India, and the monsoons that have been rather active over the past 4 to 6 weeks look to go into a more of an inactive mode over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And when that tricks back into a more active pattern in early September will be pretty critical, because they're just running near normal now, so a two-week span of little to no rain will certainly start to erode rainfall totals and could be an issue.
Chinese corn crop is just in front of ours. How do they look to be setting up for the harvest season?
They look great. There's continue to be no problems across China all summer long, and there's no signs of any issues as they go into harvest at this point.
Okay. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Heat in the southern portions of Russia. Very warm there, 95 to 102 over the weekend. That heat wave will last through most of this week.
Thanks much.
Mm-hmm.
That's Josh Darr. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon. Tune in tomorrow for complete details, and we will have folks from the John Deere Midwestern Crop Tour on with us tomorrow during this program.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston, Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. Blood donation takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information at 367-2202